Usually when we think of school safety, we picture fire drills. You hear the alarm, you line up, you walk out to the sports field.
Right, yeah, the threat is super obvious there. You can literally smell the smoke, and the response is practiced.
Exactly. But imagine trying to write a safety drill for a completely invisible threat, like a threat that hides for years before showing itself, spreading faster than anyone can track.
Yeah, suddenly the traditional playbook just goes right out the window.
It really does. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
We are looking at a really fascinating primary source today. It's the August 1999 South African Government Gazette, and it details the national policy on HIV/AIDS in public schools.
And our mission here is to figure out how an education system builds a comprehensive playbook to navigate a massive health crisis, while fiercely protecting human rights.
It's a tough balance.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this because reading through it, this is not just bureaucratic red tape. It feels like a frontline survival guide for schools facing an unprecedented epidemic.
Well, and to understand why it reads like a survival guide, you really have to look at the sheer scale of the crisis back in 1998, which is what drove this 1999 policy.
Right.
The statistics cited in the Gazette are just staggering. They noted a 33.8% increase in the epidemic's pace.
Wait, a 33% increase?
Yeah.
That is a terrifying acceleration. It's kind of like an invisible storm where you don't see the dark clouds or the lightning. You only realize it hit when the damage is already done years later.
That's a great way to put it. And the demographic data makes that acceleration even more alarming, honestly. One in eight sexually active individuals over the age of 14 was infected.
Oh, wow. One in eight.
Yeah, and we saw a 65.4% rise in infections among pregnant teens under the age of 20 in just a single year.
See, that is a really insidious part here. The virus had this long asymptomatic window period.
Right, the 5 to 8 years where you feel fine.
Exactly. People could be infected and feel perfectly healthy for years. Because the spread was so vast and hidden, the government couldn't just rely on screening at the school gate.
They really couldn't. They had to fundamentally change how people physically interacted on a daily basis.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Like, how does a school actually function when any scraped knee on the playground is suddenly a potential hazard?
Well, their answer was a strict mandate of what they called universal precautions.
Okay.
And the underlying logic here is crucial. Because you cannot know who is infected, you must assume everyone is. The policy required schools to treat all blood and bodily fluids as potentially infectious, mandating latex gloves for any cleanup.
Wait, though, what if a school simply didn't have gloves?
The Gazette actually planned for that. It specifically instructed staff to use unbroken plastic bags over their hands in a
Oh,
pinch.
wow. So literally whatever barrier you can find.
Yeah, whatever works. They also required a very specific 1 to 10 household bleach solution for cleaning up spills. And that ratio isn't random. It's the exact chemical threshold needed to completely break down the virus's outer envelope on a surface, neutralizing the biohazard.
So it's an absolute barrier method,
Yeah.
just a very cold clinical approach to safety. But I have to push back on this a little bit because it feels like a glaring contradiction.
Oh, so.
Well, when you mandate that every single bloody nose or scraped elbow must be treated like toxic waste, doesn't that make kids utterly terrified of their own classmates?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, how do you maintain a school community when everyone is a potential threat?
You're completely right to point out that fear. And what's fascinating here is how the policy directly anticipated your exact concern.
They knew it would cause panic.
Yeah, they knew the bleach and the gloves would breed stigma, so they created strict anti-discrimination mandates right alongside the safety rules.
Oh, interesting.
For instance, the policy completely banned any mandatory HIV testing for student admission or teacher employment.
The Gazette actually explicitly stated that refusing to study with or work with an HIV-positive peer was strictly prohibited. You couldn't just isolate people based on fear.
Right. Instead of isolation, they relied on integration. The policy mandated life skills education and counseling designed to build a culture of non-discrimination.
So while the physical barriers were up, like the plastic bags and the bleach, the social barriers were actively being torn down.
Exactly. They explained the signs of transmission clearly to allay those excessive fears and really just reduce the stigma.
It's a masterclass in balance. Whether you are leading a team today or just navigating our own post-pandemic world, this 1999 policy is a powerful case study for you.
I agree.
It balances those cold clinical safety protocols with a profound respect for human dignity.
A public health response doesn't have to sacrifice human rights to achieve safety. Knowledge and compassion were treated as essential safety equipment right alongside the bleach.
I love that. Which leaves you with something to think about as we wrap up. This entire policy relied heavily on carefully managed, scientifically accurate information being distributed directly by the schools.
Right, before the internet was everywhere.
Exactly. So if a similar, highly stigmatized health crisis struck today, would our modern, hyper-connected internet age make implementing a compassion-first policy like this easier or exponentially harder?
That's a really great question.
Would the invisible storm of a virus be matched by an invisible storm of misinformation?